From pop culture to politics, this is the Michael Medved Show.
And another great day in this greatest nation on God's green earth. And what a great nation to confront the great question, what are we going to tell the kids? About what? About impeachment. This has become a big mantra for the Democrats. We have some thoughts on that. We also have the very latest on the duel on Twitter and in social media and in general media between the President of the United States and the Time Magazine Person of the Year. That's Greta Thunberg. President Trump is being accused, I think falsely, of cyberbullying. So where is Melania on that? We will get to that. We also have three gigantic new movies, all of them Oscar contenders. And all of them have received some pretty generous attention from the various critics organizations and the Golden Globes and organizations that have already nominated for top achievements in movies. First off, there is Bombshell, which is the movie with Charlize Theron and Nicole Kidman and Margot Robbie and John Lithgow about the inside of Fox News and the Fox News sexual harassment scandal. And we also have Clint Eastwood's new movie, 89 years old, one of the best movies of his career. I'll give you a hint. That's what it is. It's called Richard Jewell, and it's a true story of a guy, security guard, who appeared to be a hero, but then got accused of participation in the bombing from which he rescued people. And then we also doing Adam Sandler's bid for Oscar glory in a non-comedy, pretty grim and gritty film called Uncut Gems. We'll review them all coming up on the Medved Show. First up, just a little bit of sample of the Democrats deploying the children to try to put impeachment in perspective. What you're going to hear is first Congressman Ted Deutch of Florida during the interminable hearings yesterday before they finally reassembled this morning and voted 23 to 17 to go ahead and refer the impeachment to the House floor. They'll be voting on that at some point next week. The Ted Deutch spoke during the Judiciary Committee hearings. And then you're going to hear Nancy Pelosi. You'll recognize her voice. And then you may not recognize the voice of Adam Schiff, who was appearing on Stephen Colbert's show last night. Listen.
And so I asked my kids on our family group text what they thought at this moment. One of my kids said, Trump has made me feel like our country is failing.
So when I spoke to the president, I said, look, I'm a mom. I have five kids, nine grandchildren. And your children are scared. You're scaring the children of America.
And I wonder how they're going to explain one day when their grandchild comes to them and says, granddad, grandmom, please tell me what you did when that unethical man, that terrible man that was putting people in cages, dividing our country, extorting our allies. Please tell me what you did to stand up to that man. What will their answer be? For all too many, it will be nothing. It will be nothing except shame.
Okay, this is based, Adam Schiff's last thing is that, what did you do to stop President Trump? There's a famous recruiting ad that the British used in World War I, actually. And it shows a gentleman sitting on his couch, actually in an easy chair. He's reading a newspaper. He's smoking a pipe. And there are two little children who come up and they say, what did you do in the war, Daddy? Okay, is this really that? Where this is a moment of moral crisis because of the phone call with President Zelensky of Ukraine, who does not think there was anything wrong with the call. I feel sorry for President Zelensky because he doesn't want to be in the middle of all this. But this very idea that you have to tell the children, if you want to volunteer for me what you're telling your children, young children, about impeachment, please do so. You can do so at 1-800-955-1776. And Nancy Pelosi's kids are, well, they're all adults. Actually, they're all middle-aged. I mean, Nancy Pelosi is 79? Okay, this whole idea of kids, I think about our very bright granddaughter. I've got to say it. I'm proud of her. Our granddaughter Julia is going to be 3. And what do we tell her about impeachment? Nothing.
Children are scared.
Okay, I don't think she's scared. I don't think she is losing sleep at night. She doesn't have nightmares about Trump. She will hear Trump talked about some in her house. But do you remember, those of you who either were young kids or had young kids? I mean, I was trying to think of when I first started paying attention to politics. And I do remember, I have very vivid memories when I was 4 years old, almost five, of my parents listening to the Army-McCarthy hearings on TV. And that was, and, you know, basically my question is, why are those people shouting at each other? And they said, oh, this is a bad man. And my parents pointed to Senator Joe McCarthy. Okay, next question. And I remember getting into an argument at preschool with a guy named Ricky Higgins, who was a classmate of mine. And I knew that I was supposed to be for Stevenson for president. This is in 1952. And he was for Eisenhower. And I said, why are you for Eisenhower? I knew why I was for Stevenson. My mom told me he was smart. And I thought that was a good thing. And Ricky Higgins said, okay, Eisenhower's older than Stevenson. Oh. Okay, so I came back home to my parents. I said, I should be for Eisenhower because he's older. Because when you are 4 years old, then being older means, well, everything. It means that people are better. And I thought Eisenhower must be better because he's older. And then later in 56, I was vaguely aware that there was an election and Stevenson lost again and Eisenhower won again. Except I know my dad said, oh, it's OK. Democrats won the for the Senate. They took over the Senate and the House of Representatives. OK, fine. But again, even at age 8, paying attention to politics. And then you think about the Clinton impeachment. And we, of course, went through the Clinton impeachment with our own kids. And I remember when our daughter, Sarah, was not quite 2, we kind of trained her to answer questions about politics because I was very involved with politics, working for President George Herbert Walker Bush, who was then vice president. He was running for president the first time. And we trained this little 2-year-old who didn't really speak, but people could come up and ask her, say, ask Sarah. She'll tell you, who are you for president? And she would say, you know, we actually have this on tape. She'd say, Bush. And she said, do you think that there's, are you worried about the quail factor? Because people are saying Vice President Quayle would hurt his campaign. And she was trained to say, no problem. Okay. But in terms of really explaining to her what the issues were and why we preferred that nice man, Vice President Bush, to Michael Dukakis, no, she could not say Dukakis. That was too hot. No, you don't do that. And with the Clinton impeachment, we really did not try to go into too much. How do you explain that to kids?
I know nothing.
No, seriously, this was there were unfortunately millions and millions of kids who learned about a certain kind of intimate activity. Yeah, as Jeremy says, mommy, tell me, what's a Lewinsky, right? I mean, this was really difficult. But honestly, do you have kids at home who are frightened by impeachment? and who are scared of Trump? If you do, then you're not doing this parenting thing right. Because honestly, I think it's important to get kids involved when they can handle it in the affairs of the day. I remember it was in 1956 when I was going to be 8 years old. I wasn't yet 8 years old. I was seven. My dad took me to a political rally, and I thought it was kind of cool, even though my dad told me, yeah, no, Governor Stevenson, who we were seeing at this rally my dad took me to in San Diego, he was going to lose. Okay. You don't worry about stuff like that when you're a kid. You've got important stuff to deal with, is whether or not you're going to be allowed to play second base in that bowl game coming up. Yeah, and one of the things that you don't want to have to worry about is climate change. There is this current thing. President Trump is being reamed. And maybe they should add this as a third article of impeachment when this goes to the House floor. They always could. He tweeted out about Greta Thunberg being chosen as Time Magazine's Person of the Year. And here's the tweet in all its... Now, cover your ears, because this is so wounding. So ridiculous, Trump said in his tweet. He said, Greta, go to a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Greta, chill.
How dare you?
And this went along with a previous tweet that he had sent out when she was speaking at the UN, where he had said, basically, she seems like a fun-loving young woman, positive young girl. Okay, this is not attacking her on Twitter to say, chill, Greta, chill. And by the way, and Greta Thunberg, to her enormous credit, reacted with a sense of humor here, because she changed her online biography to reflect the president's tweet. He said, so ridiculous, Greta must work on her anger management problem, then go to a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Greta, chill. And Thunberg updated her new Twitter bio to reflect Trump's comments. Her Twitter bio now says she's a teenager working on her anger management problem, currently chilling and watching a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Okay, good. This is a funny exchange. I think it's amusing and good on both of them. They both have a sense of humor. But not the people who are attacking the president. They even asked his press spokesman about it. What do you say about the president who attacks a child with autism? Well, she doesn't have autism. She has Asperger's, which is on the autism spectrum. But the fact is, it's her parents who choose to put her forward for all this, to a speech to the UN. Jeannie Most on CNN, who can be very, very funny, actually had some very valuable, it seems to me, perspective on this particular issue.
It's one thing for a comedian to joke about 16-year-old climate activist Greta Thunberg being named Time's Person of the Year.
When asked what she thought about Time, Thunberg said, we probably have about 5-6 years left.
It's another thing when President Trump goes after her.
This is his tweet. So ridiculous. Greta must work on her anger management problem. Hello, look in the mirror.
The president continued, then go to a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. Chill, Greta, chill. Reaction wasn't chill. What kind of president bullies a teenager? Thunder Joe Biden. One cartoonist pictured them as Greta and Regretta. Thunberg herself responded by changing her Twitter bio to a teenager working on her anger management problem, currently chilling and watching a good old-fashioned movie with a friend. One fan compared Greta Thunberg in a war of wits with Donald J. Trump to shooting fish in a barrel after her September climate speech at the UN.
You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words.
President Trump tweeted, she seems like a very happy young girl looking forward to a bright and wonderful future. She then made that her bio. Just the other day, Melania Trump went after an impeachment expert for mentioning that Trump's 13-year-old.
So while the president can name his son Barron, he can't make him a Barron.
Now, so many critics are noting the irony of President Trump mocking a teen that the First Lady's anti-bullying campaign, Be Best, started to trend. Things came to a head when President Trump's campaign war room literally used his head, leaving critics shaking their heads. Over this, the president's head photoshopped on Greta's body.
Okay, it's a funny image. Because people do feel, and by the way, they're right. I mean, President Trump, like him or hate him, remember, they don't put people on the cover of Time as person of the year generally because they approve of them. It's supposed to be the person who's impacted the world the most in the year just passed. Anyone really believe that Greta Thunberg, if that's the right way to pronounce it, my Swedish, not quite up to snuff, but that Greta Thunberg really is the individual who impacted the world most significantly in the past year? It is ridiculous. And by the way, the comparison of Greta Thunberg and Barron Trump is ridiculous. Now you can say, oh, no, there's every kind of comparison because they should both be off limits because they both may be on some kind of spectrum. Okay, it's ridiculous. The Trumps have not exploited Barron. They've honestly tried to keep him under wraps and allow him to enjoy his childhood and growing up. And he's never spoken in public that I know of. I mean, do you know what his voice sounds like? We know what Greta Thunberg's voice sounds like. I mean, the whole world knows. And she hasn't been shy.
How dare you?
Right, well, exactly. If you're going to talk like that, you can't be beyond criticism. You don't speak to the United Nations General Assembly, for goodness sake, and then say, oh, no, you can't possibly criticize her because she's a child. It's the height of hypocrisy. Barron Trump is something different. And I want to say that all credit to First Lady Melania Trump, who has tried to keep him out of the limelight. I mean, this is more like Jimmy Carter used to refer to Amy Carter, and he talked about talking with her about nuclear war. Remember, this was Amy Carter at the time, who's apparently a very brilliant woman today, grown up, obviously. But she was a very smart young girl, and President Carter was mocked because he was getting nuclear advice from a child. But now no one's mocking Greta Thunberg, and you're not allowed to mock her.
You have stolen my dreams and my childhood with your empty words.
Okay, who's stolen her childhood? Her parents, who take a girl who has Asperger's, apparently, and they put her on a sailboat and they go for publicity and they send her around the world. It may be a noble cause if you think it's a noble cause. Actually, there is reason to believe, and we'll cover this next week, that the climate alarmism is doing more harm in the world than good. But to compare this to Barron Trump, I don't remember a single occasion where President Trump has tried to exploit his son Barron. And can people, even people very critical of the president, give credit to the president and the first lady for trying to keep Barron out of the line of fire? Which is why Pamela Karlan, the Stanford law professor, who said, well, he can name his son Barron, but he can't make him Barron. Well, she apologized later that same day. We are going to be talking about another issue of drawing lines with little kids. We have a Tomlin's take with rock star Greg Tomlin about exposing kids to basically very liberal messages about family, even when it's in a fun musical. And then we have big new movies to review, Uncut Gems and Richard Jewell and Bombshell, all coming up on The Medved Show.
We will not let you get away with this.
On The Michael Medved Show, don't wait past the weekend. Go directly to michaelmedved.com and order your own signed copy of God's Hand on America. It's a perfect Christmas gift. It is a perfect Hanukkah gift. And there is material in there that is very affirming, whether you're Christian or Jewish or just a patriotic American. You get your signed copy, and you get along with it 3 free months of MedHead membership. Go to michaelmedved.com and click on the banner for God's Hand on America. Greg Tomlin joins me, my friend and producer on the Michael Medved Show. And I wanted Greg to join me for another Tomlin's take, because what he was talking about, and this is sort of off mic a couple of days ago, had to do with, I think, an issue that a lot of people are confronting, is holiday season entertainment and values. And is there any line that should be drawn about what you show to your small kids? Now, your kids, Penny's 6, right?
River's 6, Penny 9, and Jonas is 3 now.
So 9, 6, and 3. And your mom was talking about what sounded like really nice family entertainment for all of the kids, right?
Yeah, great. So a wonderful Tomlin family tradition that we have in our extended family is to go see a play around Christmas season every year. My family, my brother's family, my sister's family, and our parents, we either go to Taproot Theater or Fifth Avenue and enjoy some holiday-themed piece of entertainment. And this year, my mom proposed that we go see the play Mrs. Doubtfire, which I didn't know was a stage production. Of course, it's based on the film featuring Robin Williams, the late, great Robin Williams, a movie that I loved as a kid when I was about 12 or 13 when it came out. And my mom asked, you know, who wants to go see this with us?
In case people don't remember, and there are going to be some people out there who don't remember, Mrs. Doubtfire, Robin Williams, this is not a spoiler of kind, because people need to know this.
30 years old.
Yeah. Robin Williams plays a guy who's divorced, and in order to get close to his kids and spend time with his kids, he dresses up as a phony nanny, Mrs. Doubtfire. So he dresses up and in drag and
an elderly Scottish woman, I think.
Correct. And Mrs. Doubtfire becomes the beloved nanny for his own real kids. It's the only way a divorced dad can spend more time with his kids. So what's wrong with that?
Correct. Well, and at the end, he's exposed for, you know, leading this sort of double life.
Well, be careful. Not exposed. He's revealed or whatever.
Yes, I don't want to imply anything unsavory. But there's a message at the end of the film, and the message is very heavy-handed. And the essence of the movie is that families come in all shapes and sizes, and it doesn't matter whether it's a nuclear family or not. What matters is love. That's the true heart of the movie. And I recalled my dad at the time when it came out going, this is funny, it's brilliant, but I'm not so sure I'm willing to embrace this message that all families are co-equal in a sense. I know that that's a reality, that there are divorced families, same-sex families, and nuclear families, and we live in a pluralistic society, right? But what messages do you want to be communicating and endorsing to your children? And so I thought about this in context of going to see this Mrs. Doubtfire play in Seattle.
Now, hold on for a moment. This play, it's a musical, mm-hmm. and it's supposed to have terrific singing and dancing. It's headed toward Broadway, so mm-hmm. people are going to be seeing it around the country. It's just opening in Seattle.
Very popular.
Very popular. Everybody loves it. And was your mom proposing taking a little three-year-old Jonas?
So that was my hesitation. She just asked us, does anybody want to bring their kids? And I learned from my wife's aunt, who had seen it, what the play really preaches. And it turns out that at the end, there is a big message about all families are the same, even if they look different. And a bunch of different families appear on stage at the end. You've got a divorced couple, a gay couple, a heterosexual couple. And it says, look,
how
we're
about
all
a trans
equal.
Couple?
I'm not sure about a trans couple or not. I haven't seen it. And I didn't get that detail. But I seriously question, me being a guy who endorses traditional values and takes my faith seriously, do I want to show my kids this play? Because whether or not we have a discussion about it before or afterwards, me bringing them to it is sort of a tacit endorsement about what they would be witnessing.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
And I don't even know the answer to this, Greg. Are your kids exposed regularly to any families that have been shattered by divorce?
Absolutely. Without question. Yes. And same-sex couples, of course. No doubt. You know, we don't live in, you know, Christendom anymore, right? So families come in all different shapes and sizes. I totally understand that. And at the same time, the question for young parents such as me and my wife are, what messages do we want to endorse or promote with our kids? We know there are some realities that are different from the way we live our lives, but do we want to celebrate those things with our kids? And I think whether or not we took them to this play had something to do with that. And so ultimately, I decided I do not want to bring my young kids to witness this play because it would be seen in their eyes as mommy and daddy endorsing all the messages that are portrayed on the stage.
So, again, given the fact that they're exposed to real life families who are like normal, have struggling to make things work, maybe same sex couples, maybe divorced, don't you want them to respect families like that?
No question. Respect, be kind towards such families. But at the same time, it is not the life path that we would necessarily want for our children. We are a family that still believes that marriage, that families are a God-created institution, and that we want them to strive to live in accordance with that design. Thus, do we want to show them a piece of entertainment that celebrates a different message? And at this young, impressionable age that all our kids are at, we thought that would be too soon. Perhaps if they were in junior high school, we could have a more complex, nuanced discussion about it, and we might bring them. But as a 9-year-old and 6-year-old, their brains are just sponges at this point.
And I think you're entirely correct. This obviously reflects some of the themes that my wife and I wrote about in our book, Saving Childhood, back in 1997. I can't believe it's that long ago. But the idea that a 3-year-old and a 6-year-old, a 9-year-old, maybe she could handle it. But when you're talking about your younger kids, just seeing the idea of a daddy who's a really nice daddy,
mm-hmm.
who has to go through this deception just to spend time with his kids is disquieting. Because again, one of the things kids need, and all the experts in child rearing will tell you this, is some sense of security, predictability, reliability. I mean, I remember when Danny was younger, I was going to say, actually, Danny's kind of still this way. He wanted to eat the same thing every day. He didn't want any variety. Oh, let's have this week, we're going to have Cajun food, and tonight we're going to have Thai. And no, it was always, he wanted pasta. That's all he ate. And kids are like that. They want to be in the same bed all the time and presumably with the same mom and dad.
And they want expectations met. They don't like unpredictability or things that throw them off or mixed messages, of course. And thankfully, my extended family understood and they totally agreed with me when I brought up my hesitation about going to see this play, Mrs. Doubtfire, with our kids. And we're going to make another selection for our family play this year. So I was really happy with the way that it turned out.
Okay, so you're judgmental and you won. And I think most people listening to you, because of very young kids, can say, that was good judgment on the part of rock star Greg Tomlin. That's this Tomlin's Take. Coming right up on the Medved Show, 3 big new movies, Richard Jewell, Bombshell, and Uncut Gems, with Adam Sandler bidding for an Oscar. We'll review them all coming up. Everybody out there, a Shabbat Shalom, Sabbath peace. I'm doing that particularly now because this is literally one of the two earliest Sabbaths of the year, because we're approaching the solstice, etc., 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 and the days are very short. So in very short order, let me get to the very, very full movie menu for this weekend. If you're looking for a good movie to go to, there are 3 big films that are all Oscar contenders in their own way. One of which is Richard Jewell, the new film by Clint Eastwood. It's already wildly controversial. about a hero who turns into an accused bomber, a bombshell about Fox News and the scandal involving alleged sexual harassment at Fox News. And then there's Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler as you've never seen him before and may never want to see him again. But we will get to that. Let's go first to Bombshell. This is a film about the scandal at Fox News, and it really begins in 2016. And it begins with Megyn Kelly, who is unbelievably well played by Charlize Theron. Now, it never occurred to me that Charlize Theron really does look like Megyn Kelly, but she's made up in the movie to resemble that star. And it gives you sort of an indication of her nervousness and her difficulty. She's getting ready for a big debate that she is going to be co-hosting featuring Donald Trump. Yes, that's right. It's the 2016 campaign. Actually, that debate was back in 2015. The focus of the film, though, is really on Roger Ailes, the head of Fox News, who's perfectly played by John Lithgow, and who is a somewhat sympathetic character in the film. He obviously cares about the news juggernaut that he's built over at Fox, and yet he also has a very clear record, as history would show, of at least a very dubious treatment of women. And that's first being revealed by Gretchen Carlson. Remember her? She used to be co-host of Fox and Friends. And she is very well played again in this movie by Nicole Kidman.
I have a whole list.
Will other women come forward?
Wait, am I going to be the story?
No.
No.
I'm going to be the story.
No.
Nobody stops watching because of a conflict. They stop watching when there isn't one.
Someone has to speak up. Someone has to get mad.
Ready to go to war?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, but you don't really see that war in the film. And the difficulty is, what is it really all about? It's all very well done, and it gives you sort of an inside view of the operations at Fox News, and you can admire the performances. The only performance that really becomes riveting, however, rather than just skillful, is by Margot Robbie. And Margot Robbie, who's Harley Quinn in those DC Comics Suicide Squad movies, Margot Robbie plays a fictional character who has just come to Fox News. She's an evangelical Christian girl, and she's dewy-eyed, and she's excited to be there because she's truly conservative, very sympathetic. And she is victimized by Roger Ailes. Now, this never happened. It's a fictional character. However, it is the best part of the movie because more than any other film I can think of, it really puts you in the place of a beautiful young woman, as Margot Robbie obviously is, who suddenly is degraded in this way. And you can really feel it. And her performance is extraordinary. Because of that performance, this unfocused and really somewhat unsatisfying film, because most people know the real life story and know that it hasn't been absolutely a tragedy or devastating for Megyn Kelly exactly. The film gets 2.5 stars. It very much is rated R because, well, think of the content. And that brings us to Uncut Gems with Adam Sandler. And people thinking, oh, this is going to be another fun Adam Sandler movie. Yuck, yuck, yuck. No. In this film, it's brutal from the very beginning. The opening shot shows you a shattered leg in Ethiopia. Somebody is digging out a piece of jade from a mine. And that eventually gets to New York to a small-time, really sleazy operator played by Adam Sandler. His name is Howard Ratner in the movie. And he's trying to sell that piece of jade to a real-life NBA star, Kevin Garnett, who's actually very good in the movie. At the same time, he's trying to fend off creditors who are threatening to kill him if he doesn't pay some of his gambling debts.
You're taking my money all over town, placing bets.
I'm having very serious second thoughts.
Are you serious right now?
I told you about how things were going to go. You like the way things are going now?
This is me. This is how I win.
Okay, nobody wins in this movie. It's extraordinarily depressing, a profoundly unpleasant experience. It begins showing you the interior of Adam Sandler's colon. No, really, it's a colonoscopy scene, right after the shattered leg scene in Ethiopia. And that kind of what the movie is feels like is you're digging. It's a proctologist's view of New York City. It's also full of ethnic stereotypes that are incredibly negative. The N-word as a racial epithet is employed again and again and again. Lakeith Stanfield is one of the good supporting characters. Idina Menzel plays the estranged or somewhat estranged wife of Adam Sandler. He also has a mistress who's played by Julia Fox. The film's very well acted throughout, but so what? 2.5 stars, which is generous for Uncut Gems, a work by the independent film darlings, the Safdie brothers. Of course, it's rated very hard R for language, sexual content, and horrifying violence. Which brings us to Richard Jewell, which tells a true story. It's directed by Clint Eastwood, who's 89. And it tells a true story of the security guard in Atlanta at the Olympics, at the time of the Olympics, who is falsely accused, or is it falsely accused, of actually planting a bomb, where in truth, he actually discovered the bomb and then warned people away from it and saved some lives.
Richard, you're a national hero now.
Thank you, sir. But I was just doing my job.
Jewell fits the profile of the lone bomber.
A frustrated white man who is a police wannabe who seeks to become a hero.
You always look at the guy who found the bomb just like you always look at the guy who found the body.
His accusers are two of the most powerful forces in the world, the United States government and the media.
Sam Rockwell is unbelievably good here playing Richard Jewell's lawyer. Now look, like the Bombshell movie, this is a film about fairly well-known real events. But unlike the Bombshell, this has a story arc. It is riveting at every moment. It's another masterpiece for Clint Eastwood. The most controversial element of the film involves a real-life character named Kathy Scruggs, who was a reporter for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, who originally broke the story that the FBI was investigating Richard Jewell, who was supposed to be a hero, as the potential bomber here who actually had killed people. And it is not true, apparently, that Kathy Scruggs offered sex to the FBI, which is FBI man here is played by John Hamm, in return for a story. Now, having said that, and yes, that's a problem, the film still works. And partially it works because Paul Walter Hauser, who is best known for the Tonya Harding movie with Margot Robbie, we talked about earlier, He's fantastic as Richard Jewell. It's a wonderful performance. All the performances work here, and congratulations to Clint Eastwood. Except for political bias, it's a film that comes out kind of attacking the media and the FBI at a time that that's kind of a Trump administration line. Who cares? The movie is great storytelling and worth seeing. And isn't it kind of pleasant? 3.5 stars for Richard Jewell. It is kind of pleasant, rated R, of course, to have something to see on this great holiday season weekend in this greatest nation on God's green earth.